The top U.S. arms negotiator says North Korean leader Kim Jong-il is a tyrannical dictator who lives like royalty while much of his country lives in a hellish nightmare. John Bolton made the comments today in Seoul amid uncertainty whether there will be new talks on North Korea's suspected nuclear weapons program. For nearly a year, the United States and North Korea have been deadlocked over Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions. The Bush administration says that nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula are unacceptable, but the United States has been unable to pressure North Korea into giving up its nuclear weapons program. The situation is not unlike a crisis that confronted President Lyndon Johnson in January of 1968, and PR's Vicki O'Hara reports.
It was the height of the Cold War. The United States was entangled in Vietnam, and then President Johnson received word that North Korea had seized a dilapidated cargo vessel belonging to the U.S. Navy. The ship, named the Pueblo, was an electronic intelligence vessel monitoring North Korean communications. According to the United States, it was operating in international waters. Secretary of State Dean Rusk was outraged.
The seizure of a U.S. naval vessel in international waters is without precedent and is intolerable.
When North Korean gunboats surrounded the poorly armed Pueblo, Commander Lloyd Bucher and his 82-man crew tried to escape. The North Koreans opened fire, killing one of the Americans aboard. At that point, Bucher surrendered. Later, the North Koreans forced the captives to sign confessions of wrongdoing. As a condition for releasing the crew, Pyongyang demanded that Washington also confess and apologize. Commander Bucher appeared on North Korean television and appealed to his government to comply.
I do not ask this release from imprisonment, particularly for myself. There are many in my crew who are in their very early 20s. And have not had an opportunity to taste either the bitters or sweets of this life.
Historian Mitchell Lerner, who teaches at Ohio State University, is the author of a book titled The Pueblo Incident, A Spy Ship and the Failure of American Foreign Policy. Lerner says the seizure of the Pueblo was a national humiliation, and he says there was great pressure on the administration to retaliate against North Korea.
There is an immediate sense of, okay, we're not going to let them get away with this, and we're not going to reward them for their bad behavior by sitting down and talking with them. And there is an incredible military buildup in the area. The United States sends ships and planes and troops.
But the United States already was at war in Vietnam, and an American military response would have meant certain death for the captives. Mitchell says that President Johnson was helpless.
Here's this great Texan who is used to raw power, and for him to come to the realization that I can't just launch a military strike here and be done with this. I've got to follow a path of patient diplomacy. That's quite a realization.
For the next 11 months, the Johnson administration searched for a solution. Lerner says the United States threatened, cajoled, tried to enlist the aid of other countries and the United Nations. But North Korean leader Kim Il-sung kept repeating what the State Department dubbed the three A's.
The three A's meant the United States had to sign a letter that apologized for the Pueblo violating North Korean territory, admit that they had done so intentionally, and had to assure them that they would never do it again. Apologize, admit, assure. No matter what the United States proposed, it always came back to that.
Ambassador James Leonard served on a State Department task force assigned to the problem. He remembers the frustrations of trying to deal with the North Koreans.
They had what's called 9 points of the law. They had possession of the crew. And it's blackmail, plain and simple, but they were willing to use it, as they are today.
Leonard says that American negotiators realized the United States would have to give in, and they tried to find a face-saving way to do it. It was Leonard's wife, Eleanor, who came up with the solution. She says she remembered from a commercial law course she once took that agreements signed under duress are not valid.
And I said this was under duress, and if you signed the thing, it didn't mean anything.
James Leonard says the task force took the proposal to the president.
The thing that sold it to President Johnson was that we would tell the press in advance what was going to happen and explain that we were signing this not because it was true, but only because it would get the crew back. And as far as we were concerned, it was a meaningless scrap of paper.
To the relief of the Johnson administration, North Korea accepted the proposal in a meeting on December 23rd at Panmunjom, the truce village on the border between North and South Korea. Major General Gilbert Woodward represented the United States.
The document which I am going to sign was prepared by the North Koreans. My signature will not and cannot alter the facts. I will sign the document to free the crew and only to free the crew.
A short while later, the crew of the Pueblo was released. Commander Bucher was the first to cross the Sechon Bridge to the South Korean side of the border. Mitchell Lerner says that Bucher identified each of the 81 surviving members of the crew as they crossed behind him at 30-second intervals. The nation celebrated the return of the crew, but Lerner says that later there were repercussions for Commander Bucher and his men.
Many in the naval hierarchy really believed that Bucher and his men should have gone down with the ship. And the fact that they had surrendered without fighting back, even though they really were not equipped to fight back, nor were they trained to do so, was overlooked.
A court-martial was recommended for the commander and a few others, but Navy Secretary John Chafee intervened. Nonetheless, says Lerner, the stigma endured and, in effect, ended the Navy careers of Bucher and most of his men. In reflecting on the events surrounding the Pueblo, Lerner says it's important to remember that North Korean leader Kim Il-sung released the crew only because he had exhausted their propaganda value. Pressure from the United States and other outside parties, he says, meant nothing.
The biggest lesson I might take from 1968 is to not overplay the influence of the international community on the conduct of North Korean foreign relations. What drives North Korean foreign policy is internal need.
North Korea's negotiating style has changed little since Kim Il-sung handed over power to his son, Kim Jong-il. As the Bush administration grapples with the nuclear problem on the Korean Peninsula, Mitchell Lerner warns that using threats and intimidation tactics could reinforce the regime in Pyongyang.
What Kim Jong-il, just like his father Kim Il-sung, has always wanted when he manufactured these international crises is evidence that they can take home to say, the United States is this great menace, and only by following my rule can we survive.
In the current standoff over its nuclear weapons program, North Korea is demanding one-on-one negotiations with the United States. Washington says it wants a diplomatic solution, but refuses to talk, except in a multilateral setting. The situation calls for creative diplomacy, and it may require a solution that allows both sides to save face, much like the crisis in 1968 over the Pueblo. Vicki O'Hara, NPR News, Washington.